Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on another edition of Weather Eyes. I am John Hominuk here for New York Metro Weather. We are very glad to have everyone aboard. It has been a tremendous couple of episodes that we've had here over the last couple of weeks. We are really excited for what the podcast has done for us and what we are expecting here over the next couple of weeks and as we move into winter. We do have a lot to talk about, and it kind of begins really with the pattern that we are experiencing right now. We touched a little bit on this last week. Things have evolved a little bit. Last week, we were really talking about the development of a ridge, which was forecast to build into the central United States. A lot of that had to do with the presence of a large vortex in the Gulf of Alaska. And that Gulf of Alaska trough, if you can imagine kind of a wave pattern, that Gulf of Alaska trough helped to build the ridge into the central United States. And so that really, without much resistance, was able to form a huge feature throughout the United States, especially in the central part of the United States, where temperatures were quite warm and anomalous. But the story has changed a little bit over the last couple of days, and it's kind of become more focused on the anomalies over Canada. And that's where a lot of the really, really warm air has become focused. And as we move towards the colder part of the season, as we get towards the second half of the fall and look towards winter, a lot of focus starts to turn to those areas in Canada, which is where we like to see if you like cold and snow. So we like to see cold air beginning to become established and above normal snowfall beginning to become established as well, because ultimately that's the air that our storms are going to be working with as we get deeper into winter. It is a major talking point in the field of meteorology right now to see the air mass in Canada be so much above normal. So that's where we're going to start, and that's where I'm going to bring in my co-host, Doug Simonian, who is joining us once again for the sixth episode of Weather Eyes. Doug, how are you doing on this freezing cold Monday evening?
I'm doing pretty well. Not too bad. I'm pretty happy about the Giants and the Rangers yesterday. So, and now just looking towards winter.
Ever since we started having this show, the Rangers have been unstoppable. So I think we should just continue having the show, and we can, you know, the big thing was we talk about the Rangers almost every week, at least for a little bit. So I think we got to continue that trend and hope for the best here with they look really good.
Yeah, I mean, so good that we're actually jokingly wondering, are there any good analog years from when the Rangers looked this good this early and scored all these goals? And then, of course, first thought, 93-94, when the last won the cup, that was one of the coldest winters and snowiest winters in the Northeast. So, all jokes aside, it's certainly nice to see them playing well. They're so much younger and faster this year, kind of like the Pittsburgh Penguins model of last year. So it's certainly fun to watch and encouraging to see.
It's a copycat league, isn't it? That's what it's kind of what it's all about.
Pretty much.
Rangers, when they had their cup run back in, it feels like forever ago, 2014, they had a certain model. And what you saw in the years following that were that teams figured out a way to do it better than the Rangers were doing it. So hopefully now Rangers can kind of adjust accordingly, and it certainly seems like it's working so far. But that's a whole other discussion, because they have a lot. I think personally, there's a lot of changes that can be made at the blue line, because they still have some problems that will eventually resurface later on in the year, I think.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but yeah, I think I'm also looking at as you were talking about earlier with the big warmth into Canada. I've also been looking at the Pacific Jet, because I remember last week we were talking about
I was actually going to correct myself, and I said maybe it might be better leading off with the Pacific Jet if you want to start with that, because that's a huge feature.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it has to do with what we were talking about last week, but I mean, usually a strong Pacific Jet and a huge Gulf of Alaska low and torched Canada is like a strong El Nino feature. And I think that might be due to two things. One, maybe some El Nino lag from last year's super El Nino. And then there could also be some influence from the very negative SOI that we had been seeing over the last month or so, which could have an El Nino-like influence on a pattern. And as I'm looking at the GFS valid for later this weekend, you see a jet streak over 150 knots just plowing into British Columbia, which is very strong. And whenever you're doing that, you're pretty much cutting off any cross-polar flow, and you're allowing Canada to torch, and you're also allowing the pattern to be generally progressive.
Right.
Doesn't mean you're not going to get occasional ridges and troughs developing, but any amplified ridge and trough that does develop will tend to be pushed out of the way sooner than later. And that's one reason why I think this cold blast for this weekend, while it looks pretty impressive for one day, it's going to be quickly ushered away.
Yeah, I think it's a huge factor, because here's the thing about the Pacific Jet. Whether or not you look at it in terms of temperature, right? Because everyone always looks at the Pacific Jet and says, oh, this is now you're flooding the United States with Pacific air. There's a whole maritime influence going on, whatever the case might be. You know, it's a torch. Whether or not it's a torch in the East Coast, in the East, in the Northeast, however you want to say it, it has a huge impact on the weather pattern, because the impacts of that kind of upper-level jet stream crashing into the West Coast of the United States inherently makes the pattern a lot more progressive. And
yes.
also does, you know, include help Pacific air get involved as well. So, but the progressive nature of the pattern is a really huge deal, and I think a lot of times that kind of gets lost in translation.
Oh, for sure. It really does. Especially when you're looking at future storm threats. I mean, for one thing, I know in the day 8 to 12-ish range, there could be a big, what we call southeaster forming, like the southeasterly wind version of a nor'easter, where the storm kind of cuts to your west and you get a huge storm that brings in warm southeasterly winds and leads to heavy rain and convection and then brings down cold air behind it. But if we still have this very strong Pacific jet persisting through that time, then it might be difficult to get a storm that amplified to form. But doesn't mean one can't form, but it makes me a little skeptical right now.
Yeah, and so let's talk a little bit too about the air mass, because I think obviously the progressive nature of the pattern when you have a Pacific jet, that has started to appear on forecast models already. I'll touch on that for one more second, actually. When you look at this weekend in the northeast of the United States, this upcoming weekend, forecast models for a period of time were showing a very dramatic shot of nearly Arctic air dropping down from southeast Canada. And what we're starting to see now is a slightly more progressive trend where the ridging over the central United States is pushing to the east, and it's keeping that cold shot much more progressive. That's a result of the Pacific Jet. There's no two ways about it. The Pacific Jet is crashing into the west coast of the United States, and it is causing that ridge over the central U.S. to roll to the east. So this is the type of pattern, especially without any type of high-latitude blocking, where you start to see this kind of thing where nothing can really get established because the Pacific Jet is just humming along and roaring into the west coast of the United States, and it has an impact on everything. But let's talk a little bit about the temperatures, because what's going on in western and central Canada over the next 10 to 15 days now on the forecast ensembles, the GFS and the European model, that is nothing to sneeze at. And especially when you consider last week we were looking at the GFS and European showing week 2 and 3 becoming much colder across the majority of the United States. That almost seems to be out the window right now because of the tremendous amount of warm air that is just flooding into Canada.
Right. And though I do think, to be fair, last week the models were starting to back off a little bit. I mean, they were still showing a change to cold, but I do know last week's Euro weeklies were not as cold as the prior. So they were making an adjustment, but it seems like they're still adjusting on the warmer side of things. And a lot of what's going on is that we're waiting patiently for this huge, you know, Gulf of Alaska low to retrograde and the whole pattern to retrograde westward. And then you can, when that happens, you can finally get the Pacific jet to not necessarily weaken, but if that also retrogrades further west, then there is also a point where the jet extends, because at some point the fire hose specific jet, it usually ends somewhere. So if that gets pushed retrograde further west, and then the Pacific jet itself is weakened at a further west location, then you can get the jet to meander a little bit more, and then it can get more height rises towards Alaska and into the EPO region. And that is what was leading to the changes towards a colder and even a snowy pattern for late November, or mid to late November even. But now the Pacific jet, it keeps, as we've talked about last week, these patterns with the Pacific jet, they tend to last longer than modeled. They don't retrograde westward. They don't relax as quickly as modeled. And that's happening again, where this jet, while there will be some times where it briefly weakens and you get maybe a little bit of a PNA ridge, all in all, it's still a very strong feature. And while I still do think it may retrograde eventually, because I don't think El Nino forcing will be there forever, I do think at some point there has to be some validity to the weak La Nina pattern and the forcing you generally see with that. But until that happens, you got to go on the warmer side of things.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we're starting to see that, on many of the forecast models. Even if the Pacific jet, you know, slows down a little bit, there's still some kind of lag to the pattern. So
yeah,
from a forecasting perspective, especially from, I guess, the Mississippi River on eastward to the East Coast, a lot of this is going to be about figuring out when the atmosphere is really going to begin to respond. And it's going to take more than the Pacific jet just slowing down. It's going to take a hemispheric change, including likely the development of high latitude blocking, to really change the pattern. Because these wave patterns, they get into a habit. It's almost a habitual thing. And they start to follow the same type of path. And so you need something like a high latitude block to develop in order to really change the overall idea. A retrograding pattern can do that too, but the Pacific jet isn't just going to go away. So that's really one of the main concerns. The pattern, one of the things as you look at this pattern that's kind of intriguing to me is how bad the timing is, right? Because when you look at the actual pattern in the mid levels that is developing, it's actually it's almost a cross polar flow, but the cross polar flow is coming through an area of Canada that has been so torched with Pacific air that it doesn't even matter. And so you have this big ridge that goes up on the west coast, and you have a responsive ridge on the near Newfoundland, and you have it in the mid levels a very deep and anomalous trough into the southeast United States. But the temperature anomalies, they just don't respond, because the source region it's just not cold.
Right. Well, and the source region isn't really going to get cold until you get maybe a high latitude block in the EPO region, like a true negative EPO. Like, usually once a negative EPO pattern actually happens, where you get the big block in Alaska, and the cold air can actually legitimately slide all the way through Canada and into the U.S., the source regions do recover quickly. Like, that did happen in like January 2014 and January 2015, the recovery was quick when that happened. But the thing is, until that actually does happen, the source regions are still going to be very warm. And as I'm looking through the European ensemble guidance, there's a brief period of a little bit of ridging into Alaska that kind of helps the trough form in the east very briefly this weekend, along with a little bit of a Kara Sea ridge that kind of helps shunt the cold anomalies a little further south. But that goes away very quickly. You're back to seeing pretty low heights in Alaska as we head to next week. And then also you get a little bit of a ridge off the southwest coast or into the southwest U.S. And then when you're combining that with pretty low heights in the northeast Pacific, for the most part anyway, you're getting a tight height gradient into the Northeast Pacific. So you're,
right,
once again, strengthening the Pacific jet. Even with some ridging in the west, you're getting a strong Pacific jet because of that gradient between the ridge off the southwest U.S. and the relatively low heights near Alaska. Now, the one, I guess, bright side of things, so to speak, was actually a chart that you showed me earlier. And there may not be that much validity to this because I think people talk a little bit too much about the PDO. But the daily, I think there's a bit of a misconception that whenever you see a big low in the Gulf of Alaska, that tends to mean, oh, the PDO is going to drop. Oh, PDO is going to drop. That means you're going to have a negative PNA all winter torch. But when you get these big lows in the Gulf, well, just south of Alaska or south of the Aleutians, even though they are flooding a lot of Canada with Pacific air, you do get a lot of southerly flow and the low and mid levels into the coast of British Columbia and into the Northwest and to some extent into the Western U.S. as well, which tends to warm those waters with downwelling. So I think that's actually one reason why the PDO daily values have been rising, which may prevent the PDO from falling into negative territory, because you get that southerly winds that downwell those warmer subsurface, well, that downwell and increase the waters along those areas. So the PDO has been rising in the dailies, which is the one bright side to a pattern like this from a snow perspective. But otherwise, yeesh.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it, because I think the general idea, when you look towards winter, right, and we'll talk in a second about our winter forecast, but when you look towards winter, the general idea that a lot of meteorologists, including our team here, have come to is that during the month of December is when we're going to see these changes, and December itself could be have a propensity to be cold and feature opportunities for snow, essentially from the Ohio Valley to the Northeast. There was some thought that possibly this would develop towards the end of November, but overall, I think that idea, we have to pump the brakes on that for now because of really how warm it's gotten into Canada. I mean, there's no way you could say with confidence that colder than normal air is really going to become established over the Mississippi River Valley, the Ohio Valley, or the Northeast, pretty much through Thanksgiving at this point.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the Northeast is the one area that might not truly torch, as has been evidenced by, you know, these transient troughs that move in, some with decent cold air masses, but otherwise generally modified. But, you know, once these troughs move out, you're still replaced by more warmth than not. And that does look like it'll continue through Thanksgiving. So, you know, we, of course, in our winter forecast, we are still anticipating the pattern to change sometime in December. And, you know, under the assumption, and this is, of course, a big assumption, that the pattern will change, it might be a blessing in disguise that all these features are still being sorted out with the Pacific jet now. It's better for snow down the road to have these issues now than a month from now. But then again, you know, I will admit, seeing what we're seeing at times does give me pause and a little bit of uncertainty to the idea of what we put out for December. But then again, I do think another thing we looked at today was the MJO, you know, the Madden-Julian Oscillation, which talks about tropical convection and the propagation of it in the equatorial Pacific. A little bit different, not El Nino tropical convection, but under shorter time scales, that type of tropical convection. And It's currently, or at least over the next few days, it's going to amplify and go into phase 7, which generally leads to actually a big rolling ridge in the plains and then a temporarily deep trough in the east. And that's what's occurring this weekend. And then usually you think, oh, MJO moving into phase 8, phase 1, that's generally associated with cold and snow in the U.S., but not in November. and not under November with borderline La Nina conditions. So once the NJL moves into phase eight, phase one, I think that's part of why the pattern will continue to be generally warm for the next, you know, week or two, maybe even two and a half. But then something else I am seeing is that, especially in the European forecast, the MJO pulse does look to weaken a lot as it heads into phase two. Phase two, as you head towards late November, early December, is also like a southeast ridge warm pattern. But if the MJO weakens a lot, which is what the European is doing, it essentially becomes a non-factor. And of course, this is a big if. The MJO has to actually weaken for this to matter. But assuming that does occur, which the European is generally pretty accurate with the MJO, if it does weaken into phase two, phase three, and it's not a driver anymore, then maybe the actual weak La Nina December analogs can have a little bit more merit. And that is why, although confidence isn't particularly high, we did ultimately go with a cold December for a lot of the Ohio Valley and into the Northeast. So we'll see if that holds true.
You just spoiled our winter forecast for everyone.
Sorry.
I agree. I think the general idea here, though, is that the pattern is going to take a little while to make these changes. And it might lead us right into the start of winter as these changes start to occur. Let's talk a little bit, but we're doing a shorter show here tonight for those of you that are just joining us, but let's talk a little bit about the main factors in, I mean, we all worked on the winter forecast, but let's talk about the main factors individually. I'll let you start. What were the biggest things? I guess let's limit it to two. What were the two biggest things for you when it comes to the winter forecast that made you confident enough to go with the idea that we did?
Well, as far as it's the two things that I looked at the most, I mean, they might not be they might not end up being the two most relevant things, but because there's so many conflicting ideas and pretty much no analogs that match the current ENSO situation, the current TBO situation with the current solar and everything and the stratosphere, I just tried to isolate as much as what we do know and what we can try to isolate, which was the general idea of neutral to weak La Nina focused in the central Pacific of those regions and how those winters tended to behave, because there are some misconceptions about, oh, weak La Nina tends to mean cold and snow in the East U.S. And that's not always true. It can often depend on where the actual core of the La Nina cold anomalies are located. And when they're located in the central Pacific as opposed to the Eastern Pacific, the winters are generally not as cold nor snowy in the eastern half of the U.S. So I tried to kind of see how exactly the weak La Nina in the central Pacific impacted the pattern going forward. Because while a weak ENSO isn't always a primary driver, it is something we know is going to be a factor. And then from there, you kind of try to extrapolate based on other things. Like, oh, well, how could a positive QBO affect these analogs? Or how can a post El Nino lag affect the composites or the pattern? Or how could the solar affect that? So I started from the ENSO and then extrapolated other things based on other ideas from there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's ultimately why the forecast became easier as we worked on it. I mean, obviously, it took months to gather all the ideas, but garnering an idea and a confidence in terms of how the tropical Pacific is behaving has such a huge impact on seasonal forecasting, because the tropical Pacific affects the global circulation, and I think understanding that, I mean, it has so much of an impact on everything else. I mean, you could use the PDO and the NAO and the EPO on the whatever oscillation you want to use, but there are a couple that are way more, you know, whether or not there's a huge El Nino or a huge La Nina, exactly how it's behaving and where the convection is and where the tropical forcing is heightened that has such a huge impact on the weather. And it's no coincidence that the analogs that use certain features of it, like, you know, west-based La Niñas versus east-based La Niñas, the correlation numbers on those are very high, because ultimately the tropical Pacific affects the global circulation in such a huge way. So I think that was a really good point. That was a really good way to start. And for me, the other thing that was really critical this year, I might cheat a little bit and say two things, was the stratosphere and the solar activity, the geomagnetic activity. Those both have a huge impact. And then the stratosphere and the QBO also included in that as well. But a lot of stratospheric stuff really started. I started to factor that into the forecast a lot this year, because when you look at where the stratosphere is right now compared to last year, it's almost a polar opposite. And then you have a very unique set of conditions with the way that the QBO is behaving, not in its normal oscillating period. And the geomagnetic activity as well had a huge impact on our winter forecast as well. So I think, without spoiling exactly what our winter forecast said, those are the big factors for me. But again, I mean, the work that it, you know, understanding exactly how the tropical Pacific is behaving has such a huge impact on the forecast. And I think you even mentioned in the winter forecast about the impacts of that tropical forcing and the weather pattern in the Aleutian Islands, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Well, I just was, as we were fine-tuning things yesterday, I came across this like a paper/blog article. I think it was written by Anthony Masiello, talking about the relationship between the low level QBO and the strength of the Aleutian High that is typically associated with La Niña. Because generally in El Niño, the forcing indicates a low in the Aleutians, and in La Niña, the forcing indicates a high pressure in the Aleutians. Of course, that's very broad, and that also accounts for El Niño and La Niña of high magnitude, which we don't have. But it's still a good place to start when you're trying to look for other tools. But anyway, when the QBO at the low levels, and the reason why it was the QBO at the low levels rather than 30 millibars is because generally the low level QBO, like let's say 50 millibars and lower, may have a better impact on the actual tropospheric ridges rather than the stratosphere. Because I think you look at the upper level QBO for stratosphere and low level QBO for troposphere. So when we had a positive low level QBO like we do now, it tended to lead to more polared, meaning more stronger and more pointed towards the poles, Aleutian ridging in La Niña winters. And while sometimes the Aleutian ridging can lead to a strong western trough and a southeast ridge, it can also, if it's poleward enough, can tap into the Arctic so much that you're getting a negative Arctic oscillation and tapping into more cold air into the U.S. in general. So those winters were often a little colder for the U.S. than the negative QBO with the Aleutian High. So it was interesting, and I did factor that in somewhat.
Yeah, I think that became a real topic of discussion for us, obviously, yesterday, but you know, it was just another factor into a forecast that I think came together pretty well. I think our confidence is pretty high moving forward. Well, I mean, relative to where we were a couple months ago, but
right.
But let's I mean, a couple more minutes here, but let's wrap up about with a discussion about where we really, how we expect the pattern to evolve as we move into December. So, you know, the Pacific jet, obviously, I think will back off a little bit. But I think really, I mean, a lot of it's going to come down to how the high latitudes behave over the next couple of weeks, no?
Oh, for sure. And a lot of it's going to come down to what exactly transpires in the stratosphere. And that would, of course, lead to the potential high latitude blocking or not if it doesn't occur. And then also I'm going to be watching the strength of the MJO as well. And we're going to be looking to see if the models start to actually show some more Aleutian ridging/a La Niña look. until late November, early December. But yeah, like, I mean, if you have a couple of minutes, what do you think about, do you have any, like, a couple of minutes to talk about the Stratosphere and like what's exactly going on?
Yeah, so let's break down the Stratosphere a little bit. So what happened back, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago now, was there was a significant disruption to the polar vortex in the lower level, so the troposphere. And that had a lot to do with Hurricane Nicole being absorbed actually into the higher latitudes. So that, when combined with a ridge in the Kara Sea, caused a very significant disruption to the tropospheric polar vortex, which in tandem with warming in the stratosphere, acted to split the stratospheric vortex at multiple levels. Now, it might have not technically split by definition, but there were two separate entities for a period of time, and the vortex was significantly disrupted. Now, while the temperatures in the stratosphere have remained above normal and the heat flux has remained above normal, the vortex is reorganizing for a period of time, and it happens to be doing so over the higher latitude areas of Greenland, all the way back towards the Davis Strait, which falls right into the NAO region. So that's also aiding in this ridging over the United States, because the stratospheric vortex is reorganizing over an area where we would want there to be the opposite. We would want there to be ridging in that area. But what we're beginning to see on the forecast models is continued disruptions of the stratospheric vortex, and more importantly, displacements of the stratospheric vortex, where the vortex is elongated towards the other side of the pole. And this is important because while we might not see a split of the stratospheric vortex on models right now, these events being top-down events, so the opposite of what we saw in October, they tend to have a huge impact on the weather pattern in the stratosphere and then down to the troposphere over time. Seeing the stratospheric vortex get elongated like that is a good sign for the development of high-latitude blocking, but it's going to come down to exactly where the vortex displaces, how it does so, and whether or not it almost kind of snaps back into organization or not.
Right.
The forecast models, the GFS and the European, both show continued impressive flux into the stratospheric vortex and above normal stratospheric temperatures, which is the exact opposite of what we have witnessed last year, and I believe even the year before that was quite a strong stratospheric vortex to start the winter. So we're kind of experiencing the opposite at this point.
Right.
And it's going to come down to intricate details. I mean, we say this all the time in this field of meteorology, but it's going to come down to exactly how the vortex behaves, whether it significantly displaces or not. And it, you know, we were all kind of talking in a chat yesterday, hoping that we had another week or two to look at this stratospheric stuff. Cause
yeah,
I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, it's going to have a huge impact on the forecast, and that's kind of where we are right now, where we know that it's going to be displaced again. It's just a matter of when and how and how much. That's kind of the question right now.
Right, and that's very important as we head into, you know, the pattern late November, early December. And of course, as we talked about earlier in the show, the only thing that might truly stop this ridiculous Pacific jet wave train and actually truly retrograde the pattern for good is a high latitude block somewhere in the Arctic, whether it's in Alaska or the Arctic Circle or the NAO region, we don't know yet. But if the attacks on the stratosphere continue to take shape, then even in the midst of this pretty warm pattern, we can make progress towards something hopefully anyway, colder and snowier as we approach December. So that is certainly a big factor that we're going to be monitoring closely.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the major things to monitor for sure. And that's when we get back here next week, next week, by the time we have this show, our winter forecast will officially be out, so we can really break it down. But it'll be interesting to see where things are then. We've kind of taken this week by week, and we've seen a gradual process in terms of how we are analyzing the pattern moving forward. And I think it's been a very, very gradual step down process, like we've spoken about. Next week when we take a look at this, we'll get an opportunity to really see where the stratosphere is. At that point, the models will be looking towards the beginning of December, and we'll get to see how they behaved here over the last week. And that'll give us a lot more information as as we move towards the end of November, which is, I mean, really starting to get into crunch time now.
Yep, for sure.
So, anything else? You have anything else you want to touch on today, or can we wrap it up and take a look at next week?
Yeah, I got nothing else. Just pretty much, I mean, if the Stratosphere, if these attacks don't come to fruition, then, you know, December could be different than what we're envisioning, and then the specific influence could last a little bit longer. That is, you know, one thing that is a possibility, which is, you know, why as much as I have high confidence in the research that we put together based on the ideas and knowledge that we have, you know, there are still plenty of uncertainties going forward. But yeah, other than that, yeah, I'm all set.
Well, I think that's the nature of seasonal forecasting, though, isn't it? It's really about what can go wrong. It's really about what can go wrong. Because you simply cannot make a seasonal forecast and say, this is everything about my forecast that's going to go right. Because you'll end up with no people following your forecast, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no credibility in that.
Yeah, that too. So, all right, so that about wraps it up for today. We hope everyone enjoyed the sixth episode of Weather As, where we dove a little bit deeper into the winter forecast. Next week is a big show for us. We are very likely to bring on two special guests. I cannot announce their names yet, but I will during this week coming up. They are from the meteorological community. They are both very smart, very great individuals that will be here with us for a full hour to discuss the winter forecast that we have collectively put out. We'll detail the thoughts. We'll talk about where the pattern is there, and we'll look ahead to colder and snowier times as we head towards December. Doug, thank you again for joining us. For those of you who are interested in checking out our winter forecast right now, head over to our website, sign up for that premium membership. We promise you will not regret it during this winter coming up. There's so much great content that we share with everyone. And it's really beneficial, especially as we move into the winter. So thanks again for joining us. For Doug Simonian, I'm John Hominuk for New York Metro Weather. Have a great Monday evening, and we will talk to you guys next week. Take care.